NBA on NBC.
What is up, everybody? This is Jim Mylock, and you're listening to Pot of Fame, the podcast where we break down the careers of former athletes and decide whether or not they should get called to the Hall. On today's podcast, we're talking about former Philadelphia Phillies second baseman Chase Utley, and whether or not he belongs in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And joining us in just a moment to discuss Utley's career in the Hall of Fame candidacy is baseball writer at The Athletic and Hall of Fame voter Jason Stark. But before we bring Jason on, let's talk a little more about Chase Utley. So this is Utley's first time on the ballot this year. He concluded his 16-year MLB career back in 2018 and got into the MLB in 2003, but he was 24 years old by the time he got into the majors and didn't play his first full season until the age of 26. So even though he retired at 39, relatively short career for the second baseman, but again, when he played, he was one of the best second basemen in the league. He was a six-time All-Star, a four-time Silver Slugger, and was a three-time top 10 finisher in MVP in the NL. Now, he did win the championship with the Philadelphia Phillies in 2008, made it back to the World Series in 2009, so back-to-back World Series appearances. The Phillies didn't win in 2009, but Utley hit five home runs in that World Series, which is still tied for the record for most home runs in a World Series. So big-time performer in the playoffs with many big moments. Now, for his career, he had a 64.5 career WAR, which ranks very highly among second basemen. But again, that short career led to counting stats that don't jump off the page, right? 1,885 career hits for Utley, 259 home runs, 1,025 RBIs. He was a 275 career hitter with a 358 on-base percentage. He had a 117 OPS plus. Now, Utley never won a gold glove, but was well known as one of the best second basemen defensively during his era, and a lot of advanced metrics back that up. And Jason and I are going to talk quite a bit about his, you know, defensive ability, because again, we looked at gold gloves a lot of times. He didn't win any, but still that great glove Utley had with his big bat led to that 64.5 career WAR, which again, ranks very highly among second basemen. So the pop of his bat, 259 home runs, that's seventh all time out of any second baseman in MLB history. His slugging percentage, 465, that's the eighth highest slugging percentage by a second baseman in MLB history. And his 823 OPS is the eighth highest by a second baseman in MLB history. So from a slugging standpoint, Utley, one of the best second baseman sluggers of all time. And there was a stretch from 2005 to 2009 where he had four straight seasons with 100-plus RBIs and three seasons with 30-plus home runs. And just to put that into context in MLB history, there's only been 45 seasons ever where a second baseman hit 30-plus home runs. So 45 total seasons, 30-plus home runs. Utley's responsible for three of those 45 seasons. So 7% of all those seasons are Chase Utley. Jeff Kent, who holds the record for most home runs ever by a second baseman, also had three such seasons. So that's kind of company Utley keeps when it comes to power hitters. Now, Utley's case is super interesting, right? Shorter career, doesn't have the counting stats, advanced metrics look great, awards are, I would say, so-so. It's a really interesting case. Jason and I had a great time recording this. I hope you enjoy it. So sit back, relax. Let's bring on Jason. All right. So I'd like to welcome back to the podcast today, baseball writer at The Athletic, Hall of Fame voter, and the 2019 recipient of the J.G. Taylor Spink Award, Jason Stark. Jason, welcome back. How have you been?
Jim, I'm doing great, my friend. How's everything?
It is good. So, Jason, a few years ago, we had you on to talk about Jimmy Rollins, who was going on the ballot back in 2022 for the first time. And Jimmy's still on the ballot. He received 12.9% in the 2023 vote. So he's still chugging along there. But we are bringing you back on today because Jimmy Rollins is being joined on the ballot this year by his old double play buddy. That would be Chase Utley, former Philly second baseman. This is Chase Utley's first time on the ballot. And today, like we did for Jimmy a few years ago, we're going to talk about Chase's career and his Hall of Fame candidacy, because it's a, I would say, one of the more interesting candidacies on the ballot. And I have been, I'm not going to lie, Jason, this is one of the tougher calls. I think I'm still going into this. I could go either way, which makes for a fun discussion. So, Jason, the first thing I'm going to ask you at the top here, to kind of ease you into the conversation, when you think of the name Chase Utley, what's the first thing that's come to your mind?
Well, I want to first mention the whole Rollins and Utley tag team part of this, because you just mentioned that. You know, I don't know if you saw the little tidbit I had when the ballot came out a few weeks ago, that Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins played more games together at second and short than any double play combination in history that appeared on the same Hall of Fame ballot. Because, you know, Whitaker and Trammell, they never were on the same ballot. Lou Whitaker was one and done. So by the time Alan Trammell got on there, Lou is gone. Utley and Rollins played the second most games in history. So they're making history just in that respect. And it's really hard to separate the two of them. Maybe we could get into this at some point in this discussion. But all right, now in answer to your question, what comes to mind when I think of Chase Utley? If I said it was that look he had, would you understand what that meant, Jim?
I would. Look, right?
Yeah, he's a guy. He, you know, there was just this zone he was in as game time neared and the game went on. And I used to talk about it to his teammates and his coaches about this all the time. I mean, Roy Halladay's locker, for example, was directly across like the little corner of the room from Chase. And Roy Halladay told me he almost never talked to Chase because he was a little afraid to, you know, because Chase would just get that locked in. And coaches would say the same thing. They would never talk to Chase Utley during a game unless he talked to them. And so what does that mean? Right, Jim? To me, this was a guy who was all about winning. He was consumed by winning. He was immersed in every moment of the game and what he could do to make an impact. He was not a guy you chatted with around the cage. You know, you could barely talk to him before a game. If you're in my line of work, if you had an appointment, you know, and you showed up early enough, you might be able to pull this off. I had some conversations with Chase that I really treasure because we got deep into some stuff, but those are the only kind of conversations you could ever have. There's no small talk, okay? And it was all by appointment only. So when I think of Chase, I really think of that guy just absolutely consumed by winning every moment of the day.
Yeah, and winning is what he did, Jace. I mean, he was a part of the World Series team in 2008, and he was part of that Phillies team that made back-to-back World Series and three straight National League Championship Series, and he was a winner. He was a gamer. And I don't know if it's fair, but like whenever you talk about winning players and stuff like that, I feel like when I'm talking about sports in general, I gravitate to, you know, basketball, like those guys with the killer instinct, or I gravitate to football, the players that would want to win at all costs. Baseball, there's winning players as well, but for some reason, maybe because it's, you know, there's so many players on the field and you can only make an impact when you're at bat or when the balls hit you. But I feel like it sometimes gets overlooked when it comes to baseball, of those true gamers that did laid it all on the line every play. And that's exactly kind of who Chase Utley was. So I'm really glad you kind of delved into that in the beginning here. And then also, Jason, before we move on, I want to get back to the Rollins-Utley double play combination you brought up. I think it's so interesting, right, that they are the all-time games play double play combo. But when we're looking at Utley's candidacy, right, one of the knocks on him is he didn't play long enough, right? He had a 16-year career, but was marred with injuries over his career. He got a late start. His first full season wasn't until the age of 26. So his counting numbers don't look similar to a lot of Hall of Famers. And I think that's a big case, you know, case against him here, especially under 2,000 hits. So you're looking at, okay, he didn't play long enough. His peak was great, but how long was it? But on the other side, you're telling me he's a part of the longest double play combo in MLB history. I think it's just funny kind of how that works out.
It really is. Also, a strange note to it is, it wasn't just in Philadelphia. They wound up playing together Dodgers. For the Dodgers, right? After Jimmy Rollins and Utley both wound up in LA, both got traded there, and they played, I think it was 14 games together with the Dodgers. That's another sidelight. And we can, you know, again, we can contrast their cases as we get along, but Jimmy has all of the traditional county numbers. Chase has none of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Chase has all the new age stuff that all the data crowd loves. And Jimmy doesn't really have those. And yet, it would be such a fun conversation to gather the 2008 Phillies around us and talk about the two of them, how different they were, but how similar they were, and how they drove that whole period of winning. 5 seasons for one of the dominant teams of the 21st century. It's very possible they'll be the only World Series winner of this whole maybe 20-year period that doesn't have a Hall of Fame player unless one of those two gets elected. I don't think.
Yeah.
You know,
Ryan Howard's already fallen off the ballot, so it's not him.
Right.
And it's gonna be one of those two.
Cole Hamels, if he'd gone on a little longer, maybe, but I don't think he's quite there. I don't know who it's going to be if it's not these two.
I want to get into the traditional versus advanced conversation a little later, Jason. So we're going to move on to the next segment. We call this That Memorable Moment. And Jason, we're very liberal here. It could be anything you really want. It can be a single play you saw, a game, a period of a season. It could be an entire season if you really want it to be. But for you, what would you say Chase Utley's most memorable moment was?
I mean, the answer is the Utley play in the 2008 World Series. I'll get to it in a moment, but there's just so many.
There's a lot. There's a lot to choose from.
All those World Series homers in 2009 off CC. And I mean, he was incredible in that World Series. Obviously, the slide into Ruben Tejada, the Harry Callis, you are the man. Play when he scored that run that nobody else would have scored. He hurts his knee in going. I think it was going into the 2010 season. I'm trying to remember, Jim. And he went around to all these orthopedic surgeons, these renowned doctors, and they all said, you need microfracture surgery. And he just said, no, I'm not doing that. Okay. And he just willed himself to not need microfracture knee surgery, found some rehab program, and he was back. He played a big role on a great team and never had that surgery. So, like, all of those things were part of the Chase Utley mystique. But I'm going to circle back to where it began. It was the Utley play. This is one of the first pieces I ever wrote when I joined The Athletic. The Eagles had just won the Super Bowl. This was spring of 2018. And one of the founders of The Athletic and I were going back and forth about that because they'd had that Philly special play. Mm-hmm. And I said, I have an idea. Why don't we look at every Philadelphia team that's ever won anything and just delve deep into whatever that play was, the Philly specials. And there was no doubt about the 2008 Phillies. It was the Utley play. So I'll set the scene. This is the game 5 after the 2-day rain delay. Okay. And this is the seventh inning. Phillies had a lead, but lost it. Rocco Baldelli hit a game tying homer. Now Jason Bartlett is on second base. Aki Iwamura is up, and Iwamura hits this chopper over the mound. Utley's playing him to pull, and it, like, the weather's crummy, it's cold, and Utley gets there. He fields this ball, and then he leaps into the air as if he's going to throw to first, fakes the throw, and then doesn't throw it. And here comes Jason Bartlett just roaring around third because he thinks Utley's throwing the ball to first base. Utley comes down, bounces the throw to Carlos Ruiz. Here's the tag. Go ahead, run, cut down at the plate. And everything's different. This changes the World Series. I work with Carlos Pena at MLB Network. And Carlos Pena has told me, if that play doesn't happen, I'm wearing a World Series ring.
Wow. Right now.
That's how devastating that play was to us. But here's a thing that I've always thought about great players. They know what's going to happen before it happens because they've seen it in their heads. All right. And so I wrote basically an oral history of this play. It was so much fun. I mean, Chase really let me in. We spent a lot of time breaking down a play. At the time, it happened 10 years earlier. He remembered every detail, except when I mentioned to him, you know, you didn't just fake a throw. You leaped into the air and faked a throw. And he looked at me and he said, did I? Okay. But talked to a lot of people about it. Jason Wirth, he summed it up. He said he'd made that play in his mind a couple of thousand times because that was Chase. That was what he was all about. He said that was the epitome of Chase Utley. He's got a master plan in his brain for everything. And that's why he's the best player of his generation. And like that quote is in my head even now because yeah. Jason Wirth said it. He said, I don't care what the stats show. That guy was the best player I ever played with because of moments like that. And so what's the Chase Utley moment? To me, it's got to be that one. But maybe you've got another one.
No, I have that one. It has to be. I think it's one of the most famous defensive plays in World Series history, I would say. I think a lot of people, probably because it's played more than anything, but the Derek Jeter flip, that was ALCS. That wasn't even the World Series.
It was not.
So maybe it is. It's DS. Okay, it's even lower there. Maybe it is the best defensive play in World Series just because, again, the stakes of the game. It was later in the series, Game 5. Is there anything else coming to mind?
Willie Mays' play is pretty famous.
That was the most famous defensive
play in the history of baseball.
That is true, Jason, but wasn't that early in the series, or am I getting that wrong?
It wasn't.
I'm thinking the impact.
It was not the game that ended the World Series late in the game to prevent the possible winning run from scoring.
Yeah,
no, in terms of just,
I'm thinking iconic like maybe not moments. Famous. Yeah, not iconic, but like the impact of it because it was the seventh inning of the ending up being deciding game. Let's just say it's one of the bigger moments ever in World Series history. So yeah, I had that down. That was a no brainer to me. So you're dead on there.
The funny thing is, aren't there a lot of people in America that if you mentioned the Utley play, they wouldn't even know
what you're talking about? No, it doesn't get replayed all the time. And it should, but that's why we're here to do this. But
right.
That's exactly what I had down. The other two I wanted to highlight though, just really quick, because this for Utley, I think this is one of the big things for his case. Cause I do this segment sometimes and people don't have a moment to go do. They're like, hey, Jim, this was kind of hard for me to think about, or I don't really know. Utley, there was several things I could go to. It was this play, which was automatic. There's the 2009 World Series, right? 5 home runs. Even though they lose, that ties Reggie Jackson and now George Springer. They all have 5, most ever in a World Series. And he's got the 35-game hitting streak, too, in 2006. Yeah. I think that gets overlooked because Jimmy Rollins, I think, had a few more hits when he did his. But Utley's is still, that's 11th all-time hitting streak. And that was only in his second full season. So those were the three I kind of gravitated toward. But that play in the World Series to me has to be because, again, you're right, Jason. Willie Mays, that's the most iconic play in baseball history. Everyone knows that play. And that happened 70 years ago. But this is right up there with one of the most important defensive plays in World Series history, which has to mean something.
Yeah, I agree. It's the meaning of the moment. And, you know, we don't have to compare it to Willie Mays. Because
that's not fair. We're talking about
Chase Utley's memorable moment. And it was his memorable moment was literally the difference between winning the World Series and maybe not winning the World Series.
Yeah.
You just said it. How many players appear on a Hall of Fame ballot where we ever say that? He had a moment that was literally the difference between winning and losing the World Series.
Yes. All right, Jason, let's move on to our next segment. We call this And Twins. So what we try to do here is we look around Cooperstown today. We look at all the plaques in there. There's never an identical twin, but we try to say, hey, who's the closest to Chase Utley in the Hall of Fame today? And this can be the style they played. This can be statistically. This could be a mix of both, which is usually the best answer. But for you, Jason, does Chase Utley have a twin? And if so, who would be closest to it?
Jim, this is a hard question. You know, ever since you asked it, I've been thinking about it. And one of the hard parts of it is he doesn't have a statistical twin, I don't think, because we mentioned the counting numbers, and they're just not a lot of parallels on that level. So I'll tell you who I decided I think his twin is. And you've already mentioned his name, Derek Jeter. Mm. And let me explain to you why I think that.
I'm curious. This is good. Right, I do not have Derek Jeter down.
Okay. In 2010, I wrote a piece for ESPN.com. You can actually read it also in my Wild Pitches book. It was called The Stuff That Winners Are Made Of. And in this piece, I decided that the greatest players in baseball and the greatest teams in baseball, the thing that separates them from everybody else is that ability to play with focus and energy every play of every game for an entire season. And after I wrote this, I got a call out of the blue from a guy I'd never met, talk to in my life, Sam Presti. You know who he is?
I do.
General manager.
One of the best GMs out there. Yeah.
General manager of the Oklahoma City.
Got Thunder. About a million first round picks down there in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that's another story. But he just called me out of the blue and he said, hey, you wrote something that was amazing. I want you to know that I have copied it, pasted it, and sent it to everybody I know. Because it's so true. Because this is what we need to emulate, is that mindset. And so, you know, I wrote about, I had three players in this piece and two managers. Two of the players were Chase Utley and Derek Jeter. And because I felt like they both have this mindset about them, we've talked about it before, where they can just will stuff to happen, you know, like the Jeter play is another play like the Utley play. The reason that play happens is he saw it in his head before it happened. Am I right? And
yeah.
This was the essence of Derek Jeter, and it was the essence of Chase Utley. And this was a really fun piece to do. You know, I talked to Andy Pettit about Jeter one day, and he said, you know, the thing I love about Derek is he's never mailed in an at-bat. Never, ever, 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 ever. All the years he's played, he never gives away an at-bat. He said, in fact, are you going to talk to him, right? And he said, here's what you need to ask him. Derek, have you ever mailed in an at-bat? Have you ever given away an at-bat? So, like, I like Derek Jeter. You know, I know a lot of people thought it was just the same old stuff. Not if you asked him questions like this. We had a great conversation about this. So I said, Derek, I have a question for you. Have you ever mailed in an at bat? Have you ever given away an at bat? Just given away? He went, what? No, never. I said, what? You've never gone up there and like just kind of zoned out. And next thing you knew, the at bat was over. And he said, never. I would never do that. Okay. So I thought about this. And that was Chase too, because when you play like they play, it's not just about what you do. It sets a tone. It's just that mindset, that focus, that energy. And it's their gym. Every play, every pitch, every inning of every game from opening day to game 162, right through the postseason for as long as you last. And that's the reason that I would link those two players, because I already did it. It's in my book, Wild Pitches, available everywhere books are sold online.
So I love that. And that's high praise of Utley too, if you're comparing him to Jeter, but I totally get where you're coming from there. Jason, I have two names down. I'm just curious what you think of these. And these are a little more, I went with second baseman. One was, I'm a Chicago guy, so I went with the local second baseman who had some power back in the day, Ryan Sandberg. Rhino over here, you know, if you look at their counting numbers, even Rhino just had 13 more homers than Utley and just about what? A little more than 40 RBIs more. And then if you look at their slash lines, very similar, you know, great bat and good glove too. Sandberg had 9 gold gloves. And this is kind of something I want to talk to you about real quick here. So Utley, great bat. And by advanced metrics, which I'll get to now, defensively, he rates out as one of the better second basemen of all time. You know, you look at his defensive war, he's right up there with the best of them. You look at any of the numbers, actually, any of the defensive metrics we have today, he's the best of them. And he's actually better than Sandberg across the board quite a bit. And if you look at players like Roberto Alomar, he had 10 gold gloves. Utley's advanced defensive metrics, all the metrics point to Utley being a way better second baseman than Alomar, but Utley had 0 gold gloves where Alomar had 10 and Sandberg had 9. Jason, my question to you as a voter is when you're looking at a candidacy and you're looking at defense, especially like gold gloves. I mean, they were voted on by baseball writers. I think they matter. I think defensive metrics, I think some people tell me they don't really look at them. Others are like, that's how I base, you know, how I vote or what I judge by. When you're looking at a candidacy like Utley and every defensive metric points to, hey, he's one of the better second basemen out there, but he has 0 gold gloves. I guess, how do you evaluate a player like this? He doesn't have the gold gloves, but everything else points to he's great. These other guys, everyone thought they were great and they have all the gold gloves. But if you just showed a stranger like, well, this guy has 9 gold gloves, this guy has 10, this guy has 0, they're nowhere near each other. Jason, how do you look like? How do you look at it as a voter? Because I think that's a big thing around Chase here.
Yeah, good question. Jim, people ask me all the time, what do you look at when you vote? And the answer is I look at everything. And of course I look at the data. How could I not? It's so helpful now as a voter to have it available. But I look at everything too. And, you know, it's just another interesting contrast when you're stacking up Chase and Ryan Sandberg. You know, there's all this, like the Bill James Hall of Fame monitor. It includes stuff like awards won. Okay. Ryan Sandberg's got an MVP. He's got all the gold gloves. It rockets him up the Bill James Hall of Fame monitor. Chase would be below the standard on the Hall of Fame monitor, but this is why. And, you know, I think if Chase's career was going on now, it would be different. Back then, when the managers and coaches voted, they never looked at that. It didn't. And, you know, I got into a discussion recently about Chase's defense with someone, I'll say, was associated with the 2008 Phillies. I don't want to identify him really. And the, you know, we had this, we got down to this question. If you ask the pitchers on that team, which guy would they want the ball hit to in a big moment, Chase or Jimmy? We decided that answer would have been Jimmy Rollins almost unanimously. Because Jimmy had this incredible baseball IQ that showed up in the field, the clock in his head, how sure his arm was, how dependable his glove was, his ability to always be in the right place, to always make that play, that throw that you would want to be made. He just understand the mechanics of the position defensively. He was so smooth about it. And Chase had a lot of shortcomings. He'll admit to him. I mean, his arm wasn't that good. He had, you know, he had little momentary bouts with the thing, even where, you know, if he had a lot of time to think about a throw, he could bounce it. He could have issues with it. But his, again, his willpower was so strong that he willed himself to be great defensively, and the metrics showed it, because his ability to anticipate where the ball would be hit, depending on the pitch, depending on the location, depending on the hitter, depending on the pitcher. I've talked about this with him. It really showed up in those range numbers, those metrics, the defensive run saved. And it was interesting watching them. To the naked eye, Chase didn't appear to be that guy. Jimmy Rollins did, and yet Chase crushes Jimmy Rollins on the metrics. It's interesting, isn't it?
It really is, because again, growing up, I before defensive metrics were really out there or well known, you know, I looked at Gold Gloves, and that's what told me who was the good defensive players. And again, Roberto Alomar, 10 Gold Gloves, he's a 3.3 career defensive WAR and -38 runs from fielding. Ryan Sandberg, again, 9 Gold Gloves. He's 13.5 defensive WAR, 60 runs fielding. And then we're talking about Chase Utley, 0 Gold Gloves, but he has a 17.3 defensive WAR and 130 runs, or 131 runs from fielding. So he blows these guys out of the water, but again, has none of the hardware to show for it.
Yeah. I could talk about this all day. Roberto Alomar, one of the most creative defensive players I've ever watched in my life.
Yes.
And the metrics don't reflect that.
Yep.
You know, and Ryan Sandberg had the errorless streak, the historic errorless streak, and the incredible career fielding percentage, which was a big deal in his time.
Yes. All right. And Jason, before we move on, real quick, one person, the twin thing, just for you to look into maybe later today. One person I came across that almost is his twin, which is across the board, is Joe Gordon. Got to go way back into the 30s, 40s, 50s here. Yankees second baseman. But they're almost identical. He played actually about 400 games less than Utley. So even shorter career, and part of that was due to World War II. But home runs, Utley had 6 more than Gordon. RBIs, Utley had 50 more RBIs than Gordon. And if you look at their slash line, their on-base percentage, Utley's 0.01 ahead of Gordon. Look at slugging. Gordon's 0.01 over Utley. You look at OPS. Again, Utley is 0.01 over Gordon. And then OPS plus, they're within 3. They're almost identical twins there. And again, Gordon had a pop with his bat as well as a great defender. But Gordon also had an MVP trophy, which again, Utley never really got close to. And he was a part of 5 championship teams with the Yankees. And he wasn't voted in until the Veterans Committee in 2009. So they are almost identical across the board, which I found interesting because, again, I at first was like, no one's really like Utley. Yet Gordon here played just about 1,500 games and put up very similar career numbers.
Yeah, that's a really good comp. I'm aware of it. It just, the eras were so different.
Very different.
You know,
very different.
It's hard for me to really use those comps now.
Yes.
The game's so different.
All right, Jason, we're going to go to our final segment here. We call this Court.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And it's kind of what we've been doing throughout this. We're doing pros, cons for Utley. And again, we've been doing this throughout the podcast, but there's a couple areas I want to go to. And you just made a great point. It's a perfect segue. I love when my guests give me the segue into my, my next question here. But you're talking about, you know, the air, right? Like Gordon played back in the 40s, 50s, just different baseball. Not really fair to compare, which I agree with a lot of the time. So let's talk about the era that Chase Utley played in and how he, you know, where he compared against his contemporaries. So I dug up kind of who were the best second basemen of Utley's era. And, you know, the names are not going to be surprising to most baseball fans, but you got Robinson Cano in there. You got Dustin Pedroia in there and you got Ian Kinsler in there. I would say, you know, Jeff Kent was a little before him. I know they overlap a bit, but I'm not going to include Kent here. So I'm going to just talk Robinson Cano, Justin Pedroia, Ian Kinsler. If I made you, Jason, right now, rank those guys 1 through 4, where's Utley fit in those guys in terms of second baseman? Again, you got an MVP winner in Pedroia. You got Cano, who, again, has all the counting stats with the PEDs. Ian Kinsler, sneaky great career. How do you rank Utley among those four?
Yeah, great question again. And now, how are we... Okay, is this a whole thing discussion?
Because the
PED thing disqualifies Robinson Cano. He's got no chance to be elected, so he's almost got to be in a separate category. But he, you know, he would be number one if not for that.
Okay.
Now we're down to
Utley, Pedroia, and Kinsler.
And Utley and Pedroia are similar in that they both had that mindset, you know? They both had the great peak, both like a big part of winning. And Ian Kinsler was, a really good under-the-radar player. Without having their numbers in front of me, like I think if I was going to go to war, or I'm going to play the biggest game of the year, it comes down to who do I want, Utley versus Pedroia. And I think I would go with Utley.
Okay.
We're going to keep Robinson Cano out of it.
We're keeping him out of it.
All right. Pedroia, here's the thing. Chase Utley, the reason he looks so good in the metrics is that he, you know, wins above replacement measures the sum of every part. And he hit for power, hit for average, incredible base runner.
Yeah.
As I've mentioned, willed himself to be an excellent defender. Dustin Pedroia didn't quite have the power of Utley. You know, he just was a tick below in terms of just the skill set. So that's the only difference to me there. Yeah, I'm a huge Ian Kinsler fan, and he's got the longevity and the counting numbers, if I think off the top of my head. But
Kinsler missed 2,000 hits by one hit, unfortunately, for Kinsler.
Oh, that's crazy. It felt like he had a lot more, but more than Utley, right? More hits than Utley.
Yes.
All right, so maybe I'm going with Utley because I saw it more, but I...
Okay.
I'm such a big Dustin Pedroia fan. That guy's awesome.
And then, Jason, if I were to shoehorn Jose Altuve in there, is Jose Altuve already over Chase, or does he need to do more in his career to get above Chase, I guess, in your rankings right now, at least?
What are we doing about trash can gate?
That's my question to you, because I don't know what to do with it at this point.
We haven't established what to do with it. Carlos Beltran almost got to 50% last year, and he was like the ringleader of it. And so if he's going to pave the way for Jose Altuve, then Jose Altuve is on a Hall of Fame path. I don't think he's there yet. All right. Okay. So, I mean, Chase Utley he's on the ballot. So we kind of have to evaluate those guys differently because we don't know how the Jose Altuve story ends.
Okay. So I want to do one more list of guys for you because I enjoy doing this.
There's a lot of second basemen, I think. A lot of fans, especially people that look at the Hall of Fame a lot, there's some second basemen they feel very strongly about should be in the Hall of Fame. Lou Whitaker comes to mind immediately. But there's several other names I have here. Lou Whitaker, Jeff Kent, who just fell off the ballot, Bobby Grish, and Willie Randolph. All four have very good cases, but they're all on the outside looking in, and several of these guys fell off after one ballot even. Now, I know Chase Utley's not going to fall for one bout. I can tell you right now, Jason. But out of those guys I named, Whitaker, Kent, Grish, Randolph, if I told you Jason Stark, the Hall of Fame's closing next year, and we're only going to be able to put one of these second basemen in forever, only one of these second basemen can be in, that's how I kind of want you to rank it, or then maybe it's two second basemen, whatever. 1 through 5, how would you rank those five second basemen? Randolph, Grish, Utley, Whitaker, and Kent.
Yeah, this is really hard just off the top of my head, right? But if you were going to ask me which of those would I, if it was up to me to put one in, not including Utley, I would go Kent. One of the questions I always ask myself as I look at the ballot is, was this a historically significant player? And how can you not make the case for Jeff Kent and his historic significance when he hit more home runs than any second baseman who ever lived? And he had the highest slugging percentage of any second baseman whose career began in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
I think that seems to be easy for me. And I voted for Jeff Kent. And I actually would say an underrated defender, although, again, another guy didn't grade out well. But I think he's the one historically significant player. Lou Whitaker, in terms of wins above replacement, would be viewed as historically significant because he's in the 70s in wins above replacement. And everybody with a 70 war or greater in the middle infield is a Hall of Famer. And so that was a horrible one and done for us. So Grish, I know, is also in that range in terms of wins above replacement, where everybody in his neighborhood is pretty much a Hall of Famer. Didn't really get to see a lot of Bobby Grish, so I'd have to really dig into that case, I think, now, and I'm not going to ever get that opportunity.
All right, Jason. So one last thing I want to get to before we get to final verdict here. And we talked about this a little bit, but it's Utley's an advanced metrics candidate, right? Like, he grades out incredibly in war, 7-year peak war, Jaws, all those. He's right in a sweet spot of a Hall of Famer, above an average Hall of Famer. Defensive war, he's great. But then when you get to hits, he's under 2,000 hits. And outside of home runs, he's not top 10 among second basemen all time in any kind of counting stat. But again, slugging, he's 8th all time. OPS, he's 8th. He ranks really well there. So he has this great analytics case. And if you look at his war, right, he had a 10-year span there from 2005 to 2014. Out of all players, not just second basemen, all players, he had the second highest war in a 10-year span there. Albert Pujols was ahead of him. Then it's Utley. And then it's Miguel Cabrera, Adrian Beltre, Robinson Cano. That's the top 5 war from 2005 to 2014. So if it was the Hall of Fame only mattered to war, he'd be in. I don't think he'd be having this debate. But then again, we talked about earlier, no gold gloves. And something I look at a lot too is MVP voting. How valuable are you? The highest Utley ever finished was 7th in MVP vote. Never finished above 7th. And I look at other... There's a lot of candidates on this ballot this year where they had shorter careers, right? Joe Mauer, short career. David Wright, short career. Joe Mauer won an MVP and was top 6 3 different years. David Wright was top 6 in MVP 2 different years. Those guys also won gold gloves. Utley never finished above 7th. So I guess, Jason, when you're looking at this and you see, again, war is telling you he's the most valuable guy over this 10-year span, second most valuable guy over this 10-year span, but the MVP voters are not showing that. I guess you told me you look at everything, and I totally understand that. But like, does any one which thing hold more weight? I guess does war hold a little more weight? Does the MVP votes hold a little more weight, or is it honestly, it's completely holistic? You look at everything in the same, and you just craft your vote based on everything in the same. I know it's a hard question, but yeah, like, well, how do you do this? Because I have trouble with this. Like, MVP voters never thought he was a top five guy once, but War's telling me over this 10-year span, it's Pujols and then it's Utley. That's kind of a different story being told, and I don't know what to make of it always.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's a magic formula. And my process is a very intense and exhaustive process. I'm not one of those people that sends my ballot in on Thanksgiving. It might be New Year's Eve, because I spend a long time with everybody on the ballot, and then especially guys like this. And all right, here, if I was going to try to define the Utley case,
yeah,
I would say monster peak. The question is how long it lasted and how we factor it. See, to me, it was really 6 years, 2005 to 10, before the injuries set in, where he averaged basically 7.5 wins above replacement. He averaged that at second base, and all 5 years were 7 wins above replacement or greater. The only second baseman in the modern era in the Hall of Fame with 5 straight seasons of 7 wins above replacement: Joe Morgan, 70s. Eddie Collins, dead ball era. Charlie Gehringer was, I had to be the 30s, right? So that's it. And Chase Utley. So he's got that. He's got the peak. You mentioned Jaws. You mentioned War 7. They measure 7-year peaks in different ways. And for that peak, he's a Hall of Famer. You know, he compares with every Hall of Famer's peak. But here's the problem. All right, you've mentioned this. My friend Ryan Spader has dropped this. You can do some tricks to show that he led the sport in Fangraphs war for those 10 years. Second, I believe, in Baseball Reference, wins above replacement. Is that what you used?
Second, okay.
Okay, and look, I watched it. I was there. In reality, his peak was not that long because of injuries.
Yeah.
You know, once the knee stuff came along and the hip stuff and the back stuff, he had a much harder time getting on the field. And so all those years of 130, 140, 147 games played, like, they began to drop off because he couldn't. And he was the toughest guy on the team, and he'd will himself to get out there. But that was really the peak. 6 years, not 10. On the other hand, the winning. He was the heartbeat of a truly dominant team for 5 years. Finished first in the division 5 straight seasons. And even though they only won 1 World Series, went to 2 and won more games in each year than they'd won the year before. So I look at all of that, even though, Jim, I know the counting numbers really hurt him.
All right, Jason. So final verdict here. I ask you 2 questions, then I answer them. One, and again, this episode we're recording on December 11th right now. This episode will be out December 18th. So, Jason, if you don't want to reveal it because your vote may not be done, or maybe you're not done doing all the analysis yet, you are free to not answer this question. But my first question to you is, do you believe Utley should be in the Hall of Fame? Would you vote Utley in the Hall of Fame? And then the second question is, do you think Utley will get into the Hall of Fame?
Okay, I haven't voted yet. I haven't voted on Chase Utley, and I haven't written about it yet. So I'm a little hesitant to say.
We can keep it a secret.
Okay, let me give you, I'll just give you some perspective on this. When Chase retired, I got asked about him a lot. Sure. And the answer I was giving then was not that he was not quite a Hall of Famer, because, as I said, I just wasn't sure the peak went on long enough and the counting numbers weren't there. In fact, this was really a crazy moment that factors into this discussion is when Chase Utley came back to Philadelphia for the last time, he met with the media and he was asked this question: do you think you're a Hall of Famer? And he said, that's not for me to decide. That's for, he pointed at me, he said, that's for people like Jason to help put my career in perspective. And I was thinking, what? This is on me? And so now here I am doing your podcast, man, trying to put it in perspective. And so, all right, remember now, at the time he retired, I said I didn't think he was a Hall of Famer because he was a not quiter. Right? If this were 25 years ago, he wouldn't get in. But here's the thing, Jim. I think over the last 5 years in that period since he retired, we've seen a shift in how voters vote. Mm-hmm. And that shift has been away from the traditional magic numbers toward what? Toward big peaks, toward big rate stats, and toward how those things factored into winning. And look, to me, that makes sense as those magic numbers become more unreachable because of how players are used now, how long they play now. Like, there are just not a lot of players who are reaching most of those traditional magic numbers. So we need to look at it in a different way. And that makes the Chase Utley conversation very different, very different. So I've always thought it was really close, but I'm just going to say my mindset on him is a little different now because how we vote is different now. Is that good enough?
That's a perfect answer. And then I guess the second question was, do you think he'll get in? Do you think he'll get elected?
You know, that's a really hard one because I've said this many times. If I had to make a living betting on how Hall of Famers would vote, I'd have been in Chapter 11 10 years ago. You know, we're not a predictable group. At the moment he retired, I'd have said no chance. Mm-hmm. But now I think he has a realistic chance. You know, my friend Brian Kenny from MLB Network, huge Chase Utley fan. We went to dinner at the winter meetings and we had this conversation. What's his vote percentage going to look like first ballot? And believe it or not, I was the high one. I thought 30s, potentially even 40. He said, won't even be close to that. Okay. He thinks 20s, but that's a start that eventually gets him there. Jimmy Rollins got 50 votes and he's got all the counting numbers. He's got the Bill James Hall of Fame monitor. And it's not there for him. Chase has none of the county numbers. He has none of the Bill James Hall of Fame monitor. He's got the metrics. He's got the data crowd. He's got Brian Kenny beating that drum. And so I think it's going to happen. I think he's one of those guys just built for modern voting who picks up steam as he goes along. And it takes a while, but it's the reason we vote for 10 years. So I'm going to go, yes, I think he gets in, but it's going to take a long time and a very nuanced discussion.
Yeah. And just for my listeners, you know, we are recording this on December 11th. There's only 13 Hall of Fame ballots that are public right now. Seven have checked the box next to Utley's name. So right now he's at 53.8% of the vote, but we know 13 votes is nothing. So don't hold on to that 53.8% vote total too much. Jason, to quickly answer mine, I went into this episode not really knowing how I was going to answer at the end. And I still, this is one of my shakiest answers I've ever given. I'm going to say I do think Chase Utley belongs in the Hall of Fame. And I would say going into the research here, I was almost a definite no. But as I looked at it, it's a little like how I looked at Scott Rowland a little bit, where the counting numbers maybe all, you know, we're starting to get there. But the combination of everything, the base running, which we didn't talk really at all about, he has the highest, you know, steal rate ever, over 100 steals, like success rate, 88%. He was only caught 22 times in his career. But the fielding, the power at the second base position, and then, yeah, being that face of that Phillies franchise that was winning all of those games, back-to-back World Series, and all those big playoff moments, I just don't know if you could tell the history of baseball without Utley. He was a huge presence in Philly. So I am a yes, but it's a very iffy yes for me, probably my iffiest yes. Do I think he'll get in, though? I actually do think he's going to get in. I feel pretty confident about that, Jason. It's because I think Andrew Jones is getting in the next couple years, and he's going to have under 2,000 hits. And I think a lot of people get hung up on Utley not reaching 2,000 hits because, again, I think Ralph Kiner's the last person to be voted in by the writers.
49 years ago.
Yeah, 49 years ago.
Yeah.
I think if Andrew Jones breaks that seal, which I think he is going to do, I think that might open it up for Chase down the road. So I do. He's definitely not getting in this year or the next couple years, but I think 5, 6, 7, I think he's getting in. So it'll be easier to see what he ends up this year. I think that'll be a great indicator. But I think Utley gets in. I think, honestly, I think Andrew Jones breaking that seal for him and that 2,000 hit threshold, I think that's going to make a world of difference.
Yeah, like there's an irony. If Andrew Jones is the guy who breaks the ceiling, he would have to be the guy. You know, there are metrics that make Andrew Jones look really good.
Yes.
You know? And then there are others, not so much, you know, not
exactly,
not the offensive player that people thought he was. Like there's some question even about how long his defensive peak was that troubled me and then dropped off the face of the earth after age 30. So he's been a really hard one for me. But I do think he's trending toward election, and like, that's how it happens. When one person gets in and makes that argument, but he didn't even get 2,000 hits, go away, then it makes it easier for other people to cast that vote. So that's a really astute comp, even though they're very different players.
Very different players. Well, Jason, thank you so much for coming on and talk Utley. It'll be very interesting to see who you end up voting for. Before we get you out of here, anything you want to plug? What's going on with you right now?
Well, I've been writing a lot about Juan Soto and that Ohtani guy. Just did a couple of really fun pieces looking at Soto by the numbers, Ohtani by the numbers. You can find them on The Athletic. They're really fun to do, and hopefully they're fun reads. And then coming up in January, Hall of Fame week, I expect to be in Cooperstown doing live shows for MLB Network daily, and can't wait. Honestly, can't wait.
Awesome. All right, Jason, we all look forward to seeing what you're going to end up writing about, as well as who you're going to vote for. Good luck with all of that. And hopefully this podcast helped a little bit, maybe start digging more about Chase Utley. But take care and talk soon.
Jim, enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for including me.
All right. I want to thank Jason again for coming on the podcast to talk about Utley. That is all we have for you today. So if you don't already, please follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us a rating, review, or wherever you listen to podcasts, you know, go follow us. Follow us on Twitter at Pod of Fame. We will not have a Hall of Fame Market Watch this Friday. It's the holidays. I'll be traveling. So no Hall of Fame Market Watch this Friday, but we will be coming to you Christmas Day. Next Monday's Christmas Day, with a special present. It's an Adrian Beltre podcast. We have one of our good friends, Adam Dorarski, coming on from Sports Reference. We're going to talk about Adrian Beltre and just that epic career he had. It's a really fun one for the holidays, so look forward to that. I hope you all have a great week. I hope you are taking off work soon to celebrate the holidays and be with your family. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next Monday. Take care.